As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Be the best and you got to pay a little price. If you want it bad enough, you got to do a little extra things to get it.
Welcome to the 11 Personnel Podcast, your favorite Rams podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Rodrigue, and with me, as always, my fabulous co-host, Rich Hammond. Rich, how are we doing?
Jordan, it's good to be back with you.
Nice to see you, man.
Yes, it's been a while. You've been busy, of course. We have a lot of ground to cover here. Going back to the owners' meetings, Jordan, I saw some of the stuff. Of course, I saw the stories that you posted on the Athletic app website, taking everybody inside what happened, the owners' meetings, putting it in great context, as you've been doing throughout the offseason. But Jordan, I know how much fun you have lurking. And I saw some of the posts on Twitter and Instagram. That had to be a lurker's heaven. I mean, you got candid shots of executives. You were in the Odell Beckham mix. I mean, you had to be in your glory, Jordan.
Oh, that's my favorite thing of the year. Like, do you know how when you look at like apartments, when you're doing apartment finder or whatever, and there's a rating at the very bottom of the page that tells you about like how walkable the neighborhood is. And it's like,
yes,
90 Walker's Paradise.
Right.
This league meetings for me is 100. Lurker's Paradise.
Right. Because for, yes, for somebody who hasn't been there, I mean, I don't know. I'm not sure where exactly this one was, but it's a very spread out. It's not like one building where everybody's constituted. There's a lot of open air areas, a lot of places where you can sit and relax and enjoy the scenery and everything. So you never know who's going to come by you or who you might, you know, be watching or whatever it may be. Right. Whatever you're looking for that day.
Yeah, the combine's really helpful for lurking, but it's like a very messy type of lurking where it's huge crowds everywhere and lots of chaos in between the meetings that you take and the interviews that you do. And obviously this one's a little different too, because Sean McVay and Les Snead go to this because they're a part of committees and they vote on different things. And the Rams had a rule change proposal that did not get passed this year, but kind of cool, got some cool momentum. And I'll kind of take you guys through that process here in a minute. But yeah, this is at the Biltmore in Phoenix, and they rotate between massively fancy golf clubs, whether in Phoenix or in Florida. Personally, so last year I took a red eye, and as I got off the red eye to the Breakers in Palm Beach, super fancy, crazy resort, where they do something to the water there, where it's like more blue than the water in the surrounding areas. So that's a little weird. But got off a red eye and immediately was, you know, interviewing, you know, George Patton, the Broncos GM, and or excuse me, George Payton. That's so funny. I think of the puns from the movie Patton. Yeah, anyway.
Sure.
Then, you know, interviewing people for that, you know, Rams catalyst story that I did last year, Brandon Bean and you know, the all the various teams that are, you know, the Dolphins guys, like all the teams that are doing the sort of all-in model and it, you know, some who are still in that window of that model right now and some who had epically collapsed, as we saw with the Broncos last year. And so you basically, you just go from morning till night. At the Biltmore, I prefer it there because A, I am familiar with the area, having grown up in Phoenix, not in that area. That's a long way away from where I grew up, socioeconomically speaking. But in terms of just the familiarity with it and beautiful weather, you work outside the whole time. If you're smart, some people go to the media room, that's also fine, but that's tucked away from everything. So what I do is I decide, hey, everyone probably needs coffee. And so all of the executives, coaches, GMs, owners, various entourage members, because they bring a lot of support staff as well. They all need to come by this one coffee shop that's casually stationed outside by the pool / lounge / outdoor revolving bar area.
Oh, of course.
Cabana area. And so for me, it's like, I'll just sort of tuck myself back away here and say hi to the people as I see the people. And obviously it's a win-win for me because there's the coffee is right there. So yeah, really, really productive series of days, not just for me selfishly speaking, but for our team at The Athletic. We sent 33 reporters and wow. I know we all got something super valuable out of it. And it's interesting too, because you also get to talk very candidly with the people who are making decisions for other teams. Everybody gathers and congregates in the same areas. The dinner spots around that Biltmore area are really well known, and you kind of know where to be and where to go. And certainly, you know where to be and where to go after hours as well. So it's a lot of really good conversations. All the league people are there as well. Goodell goes. What's interesting about the session is I didn't sort of look at it in this framing for the longest time, but I do now in that it's sort of a big lobbying session. So if you think about it like politics, they're trying to get these rules, bylaws, AKA these laws passed for the league. And the final vote comes on the very last day when everybody has scheduled their tea time. And so everybody wants to get the vote done quickly so that they can make their tea time. And that's why it always ends early. And the first 2 days are sort of spent floating these different rules proposals and giving it your best pitch. But then you sort of, if you're an executive, for example, Kevin Demoff and Les Snead, you're popping into various other spaces throughout the entire week, other meetings through the entire next couple days to sort of pitch your case. And what I think was really interesting about the situation is with the Rams, they had the roughing the passer make it reviewable. That was their proposal. And they really brought some extensive research with them that their Nerd's Nest had done about scoring probability increase rates in when a foul such as that is called on a drive. And they said that their analytics team had found that it increases scoring probability, so field goal or touchdown, by 40% on a drive in which that is called. Wow. And so you compare that to like what we've always talked about on this podcast as when an explosive pass play, it increases the scoring rate or it doubles the scoring probability on a drive. So this not quite that significant in terms of the change, but still pretty significant. That's a number that coaches can understand. That's a number that people who aren't necessarily in the analytics world, as some of those owners and coaches, GMs are not. And what was really interesting is the strategy used. It's like, oh, Les, you come to this one because this guy, your buddies with this guy from way back and you can be in his ear on this. Or Kevin, you take Sean to this one because Sean will get up on his soapbox and start talking like, and go and like, you know, Stan just kind of there, like all this stuff. Like it's like, Tony, you go to this one because this you've talked with this guy about it. And it's really cool to it was cool to sort of see how really it is very much like lobbying in certain regards, except for, you know, on a much, you know, less critical to the human condition scale as is politics. And so it's really that part was fascinating and they didn't get it passed, but they did. They started out with pretty much no momentum on the proposal and they ended the week with like pretty significant momentum. So these things sort of get tabled sometimes. Sometimes they'll get shot down. That's just like a whole, the NFL loves a routine. So it's like, it'll get shot down the first year, then it'll get tabled the next year, which means it's not really getting shot down, but it's not really like getting voted. So it'll get tabled the next year. And then maybe the year after that it gets passed. And so I think they were happy with the momentum. And then obviously this is the one time a year where I get all of them on the record. So Kevin Demoff on the record, Sean McVay on the record, Les Snead on the record, Tony Pastore's on the record. This is the one time that happens all in one place through the year. And so That was pretty significant as well. And certainly they discussed a lot about the offseason. A lot of it we already have been talking about, Rich, but definitely good to get them speaking, using us as a channel to directly speak to the fans on that one.
For sure. Yeah. And I know it gets a lot of attention, and understandably so, when those people speak directly. But I have to say, Jordan, and this is a hat tip to all of our friends who listen to this podcast, and also those who subscribe to The Athletic. Hopefully those two circles are pretty concentric. Hopefully they go together.
Good job.
Yes. We got it. And what I was trying to say there before I stumbled over my words was that anybody who's listened here, anybody who's read your work over the past few months has seen that coming, pretty much. And I know it gets a lot of attention when they stand up and say it. Kevin Demoff sent a very nice letter, I thought. We haven't addressed that. We haven't been on an episode since then. Sent a letter that went out to, I guess, season ticket holders, or maybe it went wider than that, but kind of explaining what the Rams' thought process was during this offseason and why they decided to do what they did. Very much in line with what you've been telling us, Jordan, for the past few months here about their plans for 2023 and going into 2024 and what this offseason means and all of these things. So Jordan, first of all, congratulations on having your work validated, I guess you could say, in that way. Not that you needed it, but let's look. We're at an interesting time right now because we've got the bulk of free agency behind us. We've got the start of the league year behind us, those owners meetings, like you said, now behind us. The draft is now coming up, so we're in that little bit of that squishy middle, I guess you would say, where maybe there's not a lot happening right now, but there's always, as you like to say, Jordan, the ducks under the water. There's always a lot of movement that we can't see. The Rams roster, when you look at it right now, there's a lot of holes. Mm-hmm. Do they have a special teamer at this point? No, they do not.
They have exactly as last, my last count, they have exactly 45 players on their roster.
Wow.
And they have to get to 90. And they have no specialists, which again, mm-hmm. like they weren't going to have any specialists. So, there's a certain like tongue in cheek. If you've been following along, like there's a certain tongue in cheek bit to that a little bit, because like, yes, you were ready for it. It doesn't make it seem any better, even if you were prepared for it. But this was always going to be something they looked at the draft and then the college free agent class and then veteran cuts after that. But yeah, it is when you do print it out on paper, although I would not go to therams.com because it's not up to date there. But when you do sort of print out the official roster on paper and you look at it, you're like, wow, this is pretty short, man. This is lots of gaps.
Yeah. So before we dig, because I know we want to talk a little bit about the draft in this episode, but before we dig into it, I know you're going to dig into it more next week with a special guest, so that's awesome. But let's step back and take a bigger picture look, because I do a couple radio interviews. I'm sure you hear from people around the country, and the narrative that is presented to me is, oh my goodness, this is just, the Rams are going to be terrible. This is a tanking team. They're going for the number one pick. And I understand, I'm not ridiculing any of those people. I think sometimes those people talk to me, they're very smart, and I appreciate talking to them. But I'm not sure that they understand at least the way that the Rams are approaching this. They are not looking at being a tank team. They did not bring Sean McVay back. They did not bring Aaron Donald back. They did not bring Matthew Stafford back, Cooper Kupp back in order to be a tank team. But Jordan, can you kind of, I know you've been doing this kind of ad nauseum for the last little while.
Let's get
here.
Into it. I had a little time off, so I'm feeling refreshed. It's fine.
Good. Yeah. So in the context, but on the other hand, they did suffer a lot of losses. This mm-hmm. is not the same team as last year. It's going to be a very, very different looking team. So what would you say, just because we have the ability to present it to the mass audience here? I mean, what do you say to those people who think that that's what's going to happen, that this is a team that's playing for a top five draft pick next year, and that this is just a total write-off year? What is the counter argument to that? Or what is maybe the best case scenario if you're looking at it from that perspective?
I would say, and we love to say this on this podcast, is that multiple things can be true at the same time.
Yes.
We're back from hiatus, everybody, and we're throwing it at you right away.
Yes.
First episode back.
playing
multiple
the hits.
Things can be true. I feel like this is that song. This is Black by Pearl Jam. Like this is multiple things can be true at the same time. Okay. Right. So that's, we love to say that. We mean it too. It's because it is correct. So the Rams could be like absolute garbage next year. They could be. And if for that to be the case, they'd have to have a worse year, probably health-wise, than they did last year, which to me is not possible. Like I was talking to somebody about this on Twitter, unless like a comet hits their trailers in Thousand Oaks, like,
right.
Then I would say, oh yeah, this could be worse than last year. And it can always get worse, guys. But as you know, if you've been reading the coverage and some of the Enterprise feature stories after the fact, really hard to get physically worse, but also mentally and emotionally worse than where they were at last year. And I think that when people say they're not going to be good or they're tanking, they don't factor in that very, very real variable of the mental emotional factor, which is led and goes through their head coach. And so yes, they could be atrocious. And in that, if that is the case, you hope that Sean McVay is better equipped to handle something like that than he was last year, because he was not equipped at all last year. And by the end of the season, I think all, you know, people will tell you and have said, you know, it was admirable the way that he pulled himself out of that space through the course of the season. And so you hope that that positive trajectory, and I do believe that that will be the case, that the positive trajectory remains. Everything that I've seen and heard indicates that. And so in that regard, you know, you have to be more of a disaster to be better equipped for a top five pick. And if you're a top five pick, at that point, maybe you can position yourself to trade up. If you're a top nine, as we've seen this year, if you're top nine pick, top 10 pick, maybe you're better equipped to pool more resources together to trade up, to force the issue of, hey, you're not tanking for the star quarterback, Caleb Williams. Maybe you're not necessarily tanking for him, but hey, you had another disaster this year. And so now how do you make the most out of that disaster? And maybe you trade up for the player who is the best in your board in that regard. But outside of that scenario, this is a team that is going to really try like hell to not be as much of a disaster, significantly less of a disaster than it was last year. And health will have a lot to do with that. But again, the mental emotional side of it is, this is a group that has to win games. It's a group led by a person who has to win games, and it's an organization that has to win in this market. And so I think that all of those things are factors here, and knowing that that is a truth doesn't mean that it will happen. That's where we get into the complexity and the nuance of this situation. But I will tell you, and you know, I hope by this point, entering year four on this beat, that you guys, you know, have a little faith in me and the stuff that goes on behind the scenes and the conversations. Like, I'm telling you, it is, they believe it. Like, they are so earnest and genuine in a way that honestly kind of freaked me out at first when I was talking to some people in the organization about this way back in February, when it's like, no, we think we're going to be better than people think we are. We have no expectations on us. We can be free. We can be, you know, we're financially clearing the books. So in terms of setting up, what is it, between $55 million and $65 million in salary cap space in 2024, a full slate of picks, including their first rounder, they're clearing their financial, sort of their cash debt, in order to clear those books for 2024. And, there's like this sort of freeing sense permeating through the space that is, hey, nobody expects us to do anything. So why not just say, you know, and I am directly quoting, fuck it, and just go and see what we can do. And so that's like, and when I hear that, you know, way back in February, I'm sitting there and I'm like, are you serious? Like, are you okay? Have you seen this roster? You know, you guys have just been outlining kind of the moves to come, moving Jalen, cutting Leonard, Bobby is gone, all these different things. And so you sit there for a minute and you're like, bro, really? It's earnest. Like, it's genuine. They do feel like they are going to be better than people think they will be. Again, will that happen? We don't know yet. I don't know yet. I'm not going to say definitively either way because the roster is in shambles right now. Yeah. But I also will say that this is the best that Sean McVay has felt about his coaching staff in a little while, and at least for the last year. And this is the best that the organization has felt about sort of where it is setting itself up to go, because there was all of this understanding that for 5 years, what their entire ethos was get to the Super Bowl. And they did have a setback year, I would call it, in the course of that window, their setback year and being 2019. And that setback year sort of set up so many different catalysts for what they were ultimately going to do that got them to that Super Bowl win, including trading for the quarterback, including overhauling the defense mid-season, like including a scheme change, including Sean McVay, two scheme changes on the defensive side and the offensive side. Ultimately, right. When Stafford came in, they moved to this like new era Sean McVay drop back passing offense. And so I think you're going to see some patterns here. And I've written this in my column over at theathletic.com twice really now. They have the luxury of continuity. So this is a group that will work in patterns. And they will. They have already shown you what they're going to do. The last 5 years showed you the way that they reset and then move forward kind of on the fly, which is why like rebuild isn't really the right word. It's kind of a lazy word, although I get it. If people want to use it, that's fine.
Yeah.
Remodel is also not quite right. Reset is not quite right. Like setup seems a little bit more. If they had a better, you know, if they had filled out more of their roster, setup year seems like the right word to use. But it is crazy, Rich. Like you talk to these people who are in charge of this team, and to a letter, it is all very earnest and genuine. We think we are going to be better than people think we will be. And there's really not panic or, I mean, frankly, Les Snead seems to sort of like really enjoy the chaos of like having to problem solve out of this one and everything, right. You know, about Les and Tony and Kevin really sort of plays to that. And they feel that, and they know they have Sean, and Sean McVay at his best is, in my mind, and I think in a lot of people's minds, one of the best coaches in the league. Mm-hmm. And so when you have people functioning, you know, without all this like blockage and disaster and disarray, then I think they want to see, hey, we all kind of hit rock bottom already. It can't get worse than that. I mean, again, right. The comet, but like it can't get worse than that. So I right. think there's almost like a freedom to understanding the way forward. And again, like multiple things being true, they couldn't break the whole thing down anyway. And a couple of them argued like that wouldn't have made sense. Tony and Kevin both argued that wouldn't have really made sense for them anyway, because what in history, what total breakdown has then resulted in a Super Bowl quickly? They said in baseball, they brought up the, what was it? Was it the Bonilla? The Bonilla situation where, I'm trying to remember which team he was on. Now I'm going to be, it's fine if I get yelled at for this,
right.
Fans, you should.
Right, when he signed the big contract.
They won the World Series and then they, no, not that one. When they won the World Series, it was like the Marlins or something. They won the World Series and then blew it all up, and it was rough for the players who experienced it. But then you could argue, I guess, it probably isn't the Marlins then. I'm a disaster. Like, basically, this a team and I now I'm going to kick myself all day for not having this tap of head. But they both use this example where like a baseball team won the World Series and blew it up. And then all the players were irate about it and it sucked. But then they were really good, really fast afterward. But then in football, it's not necessarily the same application. And you have to make these tough emotional decisions if you're the franchise to better set your organization up for success. And that was sort of something that they both cited. And then it was like, they don't think, yes, they are they set themselves up to never be able to blow the entire thing up by handing out the contracts to Matthew, Cooper, and Aaron. who, to reiterate, has a no trade clause, just to reiterate that. And so they sort of set themselves up for that, right, for never being able to completely blow it up. In that regard, they also, in setting those contracts up, definitely thought they would be better in that framing than they were. Like, they didn't predict the disaster of 2022. Nobody did. They thought they would still be in contention in 2022. They very quickly realized they weren't going to be, because catastrophe after catastrophe started happening. And then Sean McVay started spiraling out. And then it was just a whole confluence of circumstance and personal adversity. And, you know, you guys know all of this, right? And so now it's like, all right, you can't blow it up, even though you had kept this core together. So now you sort of go back to your roots that Sean did in 2017, when he's like, all right, who are my landmark players? Who are my foundation players? And Aaron Donald was one of them. And, you know, at the time, I think they were trying to also build around, like, what would play to Jared's strengths and all of those things. How can we scheme to our advantage? How can we build this roster with complementary players to our advantage, but also understanding that there's a level of coaching and development that has to take place in order to supplement those stars, those core contracts. And a lot of the coaching and development was missing this last year, frankly. So I think that played into it as well. And I think that's part of the reason why they are so genuine and serious, is because they're inside their process and they can maybe already see how different it is now than when they started the offseason last year.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Yeah, it's difficult to talk here because I feel like, you know, people might parse out certain things that we're saying. And so I appreciate the way that you presented it there and saying that we don't know what's going to happen here. And then I certainly echo that. I am not at all saying that the Rams are going to be above 500, that they're going to be a playoff team, that they're going to win the division. I'm not saying that at all. But I do think there's a certain element of,
I think it was the Marlins. Sorry, Rich. I think
the Marlins had that. Yeah, I don't know where
Bonilla. 1997. Yeah. His son interns for the Rams. So, or he's not an
is
intern.
That right?
His son works for them. He's an assistant. Yeah. Which I learned, blew my mind. Yeah. It blew my mind. I learned that I've seen him around. Didn't know who he was. I mean, I knew who he was. I didn't connect the last names.
Okay.
And so that blew my mind. Anyway, continue.
No, I do remember that. Them being kind of a small market team, I mean, they tore it all down right away. And yeah, the fans were kind of like, what the heck? And I'm sure the players were too, as you said. So, yeah, definitely. I do recall that as being a kind of a weird team building
model. I was five, so.
Thanks, Jordan. Appreciate that. Moving on. So here's the way that I look at it. Again, this is not, I'm not trying to present a rosy picture or anything like that. But the one thing that I think people aren't looking at necessarily with the Rams is the offense has to get better. Again, meteor comet scenario off the table. I don't need to tell Rams fans this, but I sometimes feel like it's maybe not viewed from the outside in terms of how big of a disaster this was when you lose your quarterback, when you don't have a running game for half the season, when you lose your receiver and the second receiver you brought in for whatever reason just doesn't fit in, doesn't give you the production that you need. Your offensive line is an unmitigated disaster. You have fourth stringers as starters. Your coaching staff isn't cohesive, is not doing the things that you wanted it to do. The guys that you brought in just not fitting in and doing what you, every level of that was an utter and complete disaster. And I'm not saying that they're going to come back and have the number one offense in the NFL, but they're bringing back enough of those pieces and they're bringing back hopefully enough health and they're bringing back some improved coaching to where the level of that should rise significantly. Whether it gets them back to where they were in 2017, 2018, I don't know. I can't promise that, but I think, and I'm not speaking for you, Jordan, certainly not speaking for anybody in the Rams, but I think if you're looking at the path to success for 2023, you have to look at it as this offense is going to, you know, almost like the USC model of 2022. Everybody looked at USC and was like, well, look at their great offense, but they don't have any defense. Well, they ended up going 11-2 or whatever it was, and they held it together. And I almost see that scenario kind of playing out with the Rams. I don't know what's going to happen with this defense. There's a lot of holes that they have to fill. There's a lot of players who are going to have to step up. It doesn't mean that they can't, but it's just they're going to have to prove it to us before it happens. So I think the path to success here is you're going to have to win a lot of 31-28 games, or you're going to have to at least plan to win games that way. And I think it's possible. I don't know whether it's probable. I don't know whether that's the most likely scenario, but I definitely do see a scenario where that can happen. And I think a lot of people are just looking at the Rams saying, oh, that roster is garbage. They don't have a chance. There's still a lot on that offensive side that can get stuff done. And if they can upgrade that coaching staff, or I shouldn't say upgrade, but if they can have the kind of cohesion there that mm-hmm. they've been looking for, there's certainly some possibilities there. But Jordan, the question that I have for you, and that we can make a little bit of a pivot here because I think it makes sense, is when I look at the Rams, you know, recent draft history, they have not necessarily drafted for immediate need or at least immediate contribution.
Right.
They've brought in some guys, whether it was Joe Noteboom or Tutu Atwell or Terrell Lewis or whoever it was, not with the thought that these guys aren't going to contribute, but with the idea that our roster's already strong enough. These guys are, you know, second, third, fourth round picks. We're not counting on them. If they do, great. If they don't, fine. We're covered. How much do you think that changes this year? Because ultimately, they also have their eyes on 2024. And that is the year that they're looking at to kind of ramp back up a little bit. Do you anticipate a little bit of a change? I don't know whether you want to say change in strategy, change in mindset, the way that they're going to approach some of those picks this year just because there are so many holes, or do they just basically look at it the way they always have?
Well, they definitely cannot look at it the way that they always have, because their stakes are just higher on this draft. And they don't like to put pressure, that type of pressure on themselves or their personnel, because that introduces maybe those subconscious biases that Les Snead is always trying to reverse engineer. But I think it's okay in this regard to understand the relevance and importance in regards to where the roster construction is at, because again, they have 45 players on this roster, and you look at the holes on defense, and it's not just that they're missing players in depth positions or whatever. They are missing players, starting caliber players at premium positions. So on defense, that includes pass rush, whether it's coming from Aaron Donald or from an outside pass rusher, and corner. And so those are the positions that the Rams have shown and according to their overall philosophical model are willing to invest in. On the other side of the ball, it is receiver slash mismatch pass catching tight end and quarterback. And so that is interesting to me in terms of how that could shift their draft process, because you can't, you could, if you wanted to, you could go best player available at every pick and you're probably filling a roster hole on this team. But what I think is interesting is you could also sort of narrow that lens a little bit to best player available at a premium position. And I am including quarterback in that because I think they will draft a backup or at least look really, really hard at their options. And they are looking really, really hard at what their options might be in the draft and studying the sort of second and third tiers of this class, as well as some of the veterans who are still available. And obviously you wait, if you're going to sign someone, you wait till after the draft, because that's when they're cheaper and all of that. But I'm including quarterback, like any of those four premium positions, if any of those four and slash like four and a half, because if you include tight end, particularly with this draft class, if any of those four and a half positions are available at your pick points and it matches best player available with, again, especially a premium pick, a premium position, I mean, then I think that sort of changes their math a little bit, because no, they aren't always drafting for need. I think you could absolutely argue that last year, the Logan Bruss pick, they were drafting for need. I think that you could, in 2017, you could also make an argument that Gerald Everett and Cooper Kupp, I think that those are a little bit more needs-based because Sean McVay was going to wanted to get a load of 11 personnel going and then kind of change the league's trajectory in that regard after he did. And I think, so you could see drafting for need and when need met best player available in their minds. I think that some of the ways that I would hope in their sphere they've discussed, at least that I hope they've discussed, is how when you're so top heavy and you're only drafting complementary players, then you're also sort of justifying it because you're like, oh, I'm going to draft for special teams. And I think in some ways that has been a mistake for them. And I don't think mistake is the wrong word. I just think it was maybe barking up the wrong tree there. Mm-hmm. And Joe DeCamillis was really big about drafting special teamers. And Bonamago was really big about drafting special teamers. And I think Bones Faso was really big about drafting special teamers, but way late in the process, like late in the draft. And he found some real gems who contributed as players. Nick Scott being a great example of this. But I also think that maybe when you look at, when you're so top heavy as they had been previously in 2020, basically 2020 through 2022, and you're drafting for special, like a player who has to also contribute on special teams, because that's the only room you have left on your roster at that point. You kind of then start to make some more misses. Because it's hard to stick on a roster as a special teamer, as a core special teamer. I think you see the draft class 2 years ago, where, you know, Jacob Harris comes to mind as an example of a player who doesn't work out in that regard, and Robert Rochelle hasn't been able to develop in the way that he needs to and needs to take a step forward, where the only role that's there for them to truly develop is on special teams. And there's some health that went into that as well. But if you can't get any reps where you're supposed to be trying to crack the actual field, and you're instead sort of relegated to a core four, not only is your position on the team very different than the one that you need to develop into, if you are going to be that high upside player, you can't, because there's no room above you to grow. You stop at a certain point because there are tenured players ahead of you, and it's very top heavy in that regard. So I think that's when you see the opposite of this. You see a player like Michael Hoyt, when they get rid of Terrell Lewis and Justin Hollins, and Michael Hoyt is sort of thrust into the situation that he was in at outside linebacker, converting from defensive lineman. That's when you see what players might be capable of. And I think that might be part of I don't want to say a problem again, because they won a Super Bowl with those tenured top heavy players.
Right.
But at the same time, if you really need to develop and you got to give your guys a chance and you got to give your draft personnel a chance. What I find very interesting is the difference in what can happen to the overall perceived quote unquote success of your draft class when their growth opportunity stops at level two instead of level five. And when they only can really crack the field on special teams, and then that changes the way they practice, that changes the meetings that they're in. It changes everything about their careers when they are not, quote unquote, cracking the top of that roster and getting actual playing time, with whether it's on offense or on defense. All of this to say, I am really curious, and I get a hunch. I mean, they have to draft or get UDFAs for special teams. They don't have any specialists. Like, that's I'm removing those guys from the equation and putting them aside, right? Like, as much like Sean McVay and the Rams have done. Putting them aside, right? But like, okay, so basically, I'm talking about the field unit, like the coverage units, the kickoff teams, those guys, those players who are made up of players who in some cases, if they can see the field and there is a need, like Nick Scott, you can see how high they can fly, essentially. But in other cases, again, like Jacob Harris, and I would argue Terrell Burgess fell prey to this as well, and some other players that, you know, are no longer on this roster or didn't quite work out for them, or the draft class. You know, Robert Rochelle, really, I mean, you don't really get a chance to see what, you know, tools he has or what he really could do. And then you kind of see, I wonder too, in that regard, is how hard is that as a player? Is, oh, I don't see a role for me. I don't see anything I can compete for. So I guess I'm just here. You know, mentally, that's got to be tough too, as a young person as well. So I think all of this is super interesting. And all of this goes to say, aside from those three specialists, and maybe four, if they have a receiver who can turn kicks, or Tutu Atwell does it, or I don't know. Outside of those three specific kicker, punter, long snapper, I don't necessarily see the Rams again going to this methodology where they are drafting with specifically special teams in mind. Like I had said in previous podcasts, you'd see Joe DeCamillis at the draft house. He'd have a sheet of paper and he'd have specific guys. But now there's, when you're doing that at that time, there's really no shot that they're going to see the field in that draft class, because they're not only are they middle round to late round picks, but also there's too many guys ahead of them already. Now there's nobody. I mean, on offense, you still kind of run into that, but on defense, there is nobody. I mean, it's Aaron Donald, Ernest Jones, you know, Jordan Fuller, in terms of guys with meaningful experience, really excited about Kobe Durant, excited about Hoyt. And that's like it.
Yeah.
And so there's so much opportunity for them to really hone in on that combination of premium position and best player available, without casting maybe too wide of a net. Again, going for immediate and rookie contract, tangible productivity. So that might also mean a running back, because that's tangible productivity on a cheap deal. A mismatch receiver, pass catching tight end, tangible productivity. A number one corner. They are without a number one corner at this point. Kobe Durant, I would say, is like their one, except I can see him playing a lot of the star in the slot. So you don't really say that, right? And so like they're without a premier outside corner. And so that's tangible production. A pass rusher, sacks and TFLs, like that, a dynamic interior defensive lineman who can set up Aaron Donald. That technically, even though it's coming via ripple effect, that technically is a premium position because it's tangible production. And I think if they look at, okay, let's not fall into this gray area of will they or won't they crack the starting lineup, and draft guys who they know they need to have contributing quickly, and producing numbers, producing tangibly for them, in a variety of those roles that most make the difference on the roster, then yeah, absolutely. I can see them changing that strategy and, like, you know, then get a guy who can bang touchbacks every kickoff. And then you're less worried about that. you know, get a guy who's got a decent hit rate and actually kicks the ball high off the tee. Then, you know, you've got, and that's not a Matt Gay, that's a Sam Sloman reference, by the way, for those who weren't here for our kicker saga in 2020 that we covered in depth, which was kind of amazing and fun that we got to cover that so closely, but became a shit show at a certain point before they found Matt Gay. Like those types of things, it's like, okay, can you maintain in that phase and be consistent in that phase, and then really work on finding these guys in these premium positions? And you can really do that at a lot of these positions that are deep in the draft. You can really do that, I think.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be the most interesting draft, you know, since the Rams have come back here. And I should say we're recording this on Tuesday morning. If anybody has not yet seen the story that Jordan posted this morning on the Athletic app website, you should definitely check that out. I love what you did there, Jordan, in kind of presenting. You almost looked at it kind of holistically in terms of looking at the different approaches that they could take throughout the different rounds. I thought that was a really unique and interesting way of doing that. So I would definitely encourage everybody to check that out. And I know we're going to go in depth more next week, and Jordan's going to have a special guest on to dig into some of this stuff. Do you think, and here's my last question on this, because I'm sure you'll dig into this a little bit next week, but this huge number of picks, right? It seems to coincide nicely with, well, they need a lot of players, so they have a lot of picks. But I'm also going, it's less Snead. Like, well, I forget what year it was. Was it 2018 or 2019, where they didn't make a single pick where they were slotted to pick? And at one point, they traded a pick and then later traded back for the same pick. So I think we would all be a little bit naive if we sat here and said, well, they're just going to make all the picks that they have in order because they need a lot of players. Do you get a sense at all of, is this a situation where they could look to, you even mentioned the possibility of, you know, maybe you trade up, or do you even trade back at some point? Do you trade into next year? How do you think, is that going to be status quo for less need in terms of, you know, trade or less and looking to move these picks, or how do you think that they approach that with the knowledge that they have a lot of roster spots that they need to fill here?
I will say this right now, and I need the fan base to hear me when I say this. If they trade up, it was not Les Snead's decision. Like that whole thing, like he said publicly, and like he finally was just like, you know, F it. I'm just going to say this out loud. Like when he was doing his on the record with us, he went through the entire efficiency model that he personally prefers, in how trades back are way more efficient, generally speaking, than trades up. And you even saw this last year, kind of proof of it, when they traded up for Kyren Williams. And unfortunately for Kyren, between being hurt and then when he was healthy, you know, Cam Akers sort of made his resurgence. Like it still wasn't really, I mean, long-term, he could be fantastic for them. And I think he's a great kid and probably will be awesome for them. But like, in the time when they needed him, that still wasn't an efficient move because they gave up more to get a player who didn't really see the field for them much, if at all, and then was kind of relegated into a third down role when he did. And so I think that like you're even seeing, you know, in real time, those types of decisions that are kind of like, you know, I think that there's always going to be functional debate within that building. But I do think that Les Snead will always prefer to trade back if he is going to stay in a pick. Again, I agree with you. I think it'd be surprising if we see them stand pat at 36 and 69. 36 especially feels like a good place to trade back because it's like you're going to probably see a run on one position group. I'm predicting tight end at the end of the first round, which means that there's a good chance that a player they really like will be gone by 36. And so unless the player that they really fell in love with, which I think they could really, in my opinion, I really see them matching themselves to a guy like Tucker Kraft, for example, who is like kind of like Tyler Higbee in a younger body. Like it's just kind of like, you know, with a little bit more yak ability. And like, I think that's sort of like maybe some, but I think, you know, if there's a run on a position like tight end at the end of the first round, And guys, you know, like they're the top four or five, you know, Darnell Washington, Dalton Kincaid will be gone. Luke Musgrave will probably be gone. You know, like all these top guys, because, you know, they're predicting four or five go in the first, second, two rounds.
Wow.
That, which is crazy. Four could even go in the first. And so I think five could even go in the first. Daniel Jeremiah thinks that. And so if there's a run at the end of the round, which is usually when a position like that, if it's dominant in the draft, it would start to have a run. By 36, you're kind of like, oh, well, might as well trade back. And then at that point, because of the earlier run, you've got now a sort of overflow of other positions that you're interested in, where you have players drafted high on your board. So it gives you pretty good position. So I think that's a good one to trade back from. And I would be surprised if Les and company stay pat at either of those two picks. But we'll see. I think, you know, there's some really good corners in this draft. It's also based on the intel they get from other teams that can influence their decision in terms of them thinking what other teams might do. So, yeah, we're gonna have to see. But it's gonna be it's gonna be fun. They're doing a draft house this year.
Yes.
Location still undisclosed, but excited to bring you some coverage from there. That was a lot of fun last year. In terms of, and the year before, but especially last year, because we could all sort of see how their process worked and maybe get a little bit more of an inside look at how the coaches contributed to the process, and especially the UDFA process, and how the assistant coaches are super important in doing that. And that was fun, but yeah, it's going to start to gear up again. And then they will draft, and then they will maybe sign a couple of veteran free agents and a bunch of UDFAs to continue to plug the gaps. And then they will keep trying to trade Allen Robinson. Although it does sound like one thing I wanted to bring up too, before we go, Rich, I know we got to go, but I do also believe that I have been pounding the table for this since last year, that I think now more than ever, they're aware that if he does stay on the roster, they need to change his role. They need to become more efficient with how they diversify their concepts for receivers not named Cooper Kupp. And they need to be more efficient in placing other players in high probability situations. And that's also something I think Cooper would probably, based on history, be super unselfish about. It wouldn't mean that he's getting the ball less. It just means you're mixing up the different types of things that you do, and you're not creating an unsustainability where it's one player who defenses account for. You want to be as multiple as possible. Yeah. So I think that with Allen, working him inside earlier, getting him more high probability as a big-bodied, sure-handed target, especially taking up space and occupying defenders in the middle of the field, that clears up a lot of stuff on the perimeter that they can do. And Cooper Kupp, you know, for a long time, Rams fans have always known this. Cooper knows this. He can be an X. He can run X concepts. Let him be an X. Let him run X concepts. So those types of things, Van Jefferson on the outside, finally going to be healthy. Those types of things. I think having somebody who occupies attention in the middle of the field, all that can do is help the rest of the layers of the offense. So I think they're maybe a little bit more honest with themselves about that than at times they were last year. We've heard comments from Sean about this. I think having a new coordinator also helps with that. So we're going to see how it goes. And they, you know, I would imagine he's going to be on the trade block all the way until he isn't. So, but at the same time, you know, it's an organization where generally, like, this isn't weird. You know, they don't make it weird that, you know, the player has requested permission to seek a trade. Like, you saw it with the Ramsey situation. There was like this mutuality between the entire process that, like, they didn't make it weird. So I think all that's going to be fine. But something to continue to keep an eye on for sure.
Yeah. It's one thing that's always impressed me about this group. And when I say the group, I mean both the management and players, is that nothing turns contentious. It's very rare for that to happen, even in those situations that could be really awkward or could be really contentious. They find a way to kind of make it as smooth as possible. So that's not just on the Rams, that's on the players and the agents to have that kind of communication too. It's always been impressive to me. So I'm sure it's good for them also. Jordan, you're going to be all over this. I can't wait to see the draft house. Based on they have to raise the bar every year. I guess they're going to have a private island out in the Channel Islands or something to take over. But nobody better than Jordan to chronicle all of this. Awesome draft coverage already from Jordan, our beast from Dane Brugler out, covering all of the picks that you can possibly imagine. Over the next couple of weeks, there's just going to be a huge amount of draft coverage, and we really appreciate everybody who follows along already. You already know that. If you're not yet on board, look, I mean, we've been away for...
Don't know what to say at this point.
Yeah. I mean, we've been... I honestly thought, Jordan, you know, we took a little bit of a break. We come back. There's no way that they are going to still allow us to do this, but yet... I checked, and you can still go to theathletic.com/11personnel, sign up right now, and get Jordan's favorite thing in the entire world, which is what?
A great discount, you guys, every single time. Rich, they still are letting us do this.
It's unbelievable.
They're still letting us do this. Every single time you sign up to The Athletic through the 11 Personnel podcast, you get my favorite thing in the world, which is a great discount. Guys, happy to be back. Hope everyone is doing great. Check in with me if you haven't. Check in with me on Twitter. Check in with me on Instagram. I'm a little bit more active there these days. And check in with me in the comments of stories. Always love the questions. Always love the comments. And I hope you guys are all taking care of yourselves. I hope you're all taking care of each other. As always, stay caffeinated. Stay hydrated. Catch you next time.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.